Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Vishnu Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Saraswata Deva Gauravani Prajarane Nirvasesha Shunyavari Pastat Jadeshatarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. We are from Canto 10 chapter 25 verse 21. Na Trasa Iha Va Karyo Mad Dastadri Nipatanat Vata Varsha Bayanalam Tat Tranam Vihitam I Va Natrasa Iha Vakayo Madhastadri Nipatanat Vata Varsha Bayanalam Tatranam vihitam iva. Na trasa. Fear. Iha. In this matter. Va. By you. Karya. Should be felt. Madhasta. From my hand. Adri. Of the mountain. Nipatanat. Of falling. Vata. Of the wind, varsha, and rain, bhayena, with fear, alam, enough, tatranam, deliverance from that, vihitam, has been provided, he, certainly, va, for you. Translation, you should have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand, and don't be afraid of the wind and rain, for your deliverance from these afflictions has already been arranged. Text 22. Their minds thus pacified by Lord Krishna, they all entered beneath the hill, where they found ample room for themselves and all their cows, wagons, servants, and priests, and for all other members of the community as well. Purport, all the domestic animals of Vrindavan were brought beneath Govardhan Hill for shelter. Text 23. Lord Krishna, forgetting hunger and thirst and putting aside all considerations of personal pleasure, stood there holding up the hill for 7 days as the people of Raja gazed upon him. Purport, according to the Vishnu Purana, Vrajaika Vasi Virharsha Vismitakshai Nirikshitai Gopa Gopi Janayar Shrishtai Priti Visparatekshanai Samstu Yamana Charita Krishna Shailam Adaryat. Lord Krishna held up the mountain while his praises were chanted by the residents of Raja, all of whom now had the opportunity to dwell together with him and who glanced at him with joyful and amazed eyes. Thus the cowherd men and women were all elated, and out of loving affection they opened their eyes wide. By continuously drinking the nectar of the beauty and sweetness of Sri Krishna, the residents of Vrindavan felt no hunger, thirst, or fatigue. And Krishna, by seeing their beautiful forms, also forgot about eating, drinking, and sleeping. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that 7 days of continuous rain from the Samvaitika clouds failed to flood the district of Mathura, because the Supreme Lord, simply by his potency, immediately dried up the water as it fell to the ground. Thus, Krishna's lifting of Govardhan Hill is full of fascinating details and has, for thousands of years, remained one of his most famous pastimes. Translation, you should have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand, and don't be afraid of the wind and rain, for your deliverance from these afflictions has already been arranged. Their minds thus pacified by Lord Krishna, they all entered beneath the hill where they found ample room for themselves and all their cows, wagons, servants, and priests, and for all other members of the community as well. Lord Krishna, forgetting hunger and thirst and putting aside all considerations of personal pleasure, stood there holding up the hill for 7 days as the people of Vraja gazed upon him. So in the previous verses it was mentioned that the Lord's inconceivable energy was acting, and therefore Krishna could do extraordinary things with this hill. So here we see further descriptions of that extraordinary nature of Krishna. So he was able to hold up the hill with his the little finger of his left hand, and first of all, of course, the mountain held together is a protective element, and even the water around did not cause flooding because it all dried up as soon as it fell on the ground. So we have, and then the inhabitants of Vrindavan all went beneath the mountain by the instruction of Krishna, and there they were protected, in spite of the fact that it obviously looked like it may be very dangerous to be under this mountain supported by a little boy. Nevertheless, they all the cows and all the people stayed there for 7 days. So this is, of course, a very extraordinary event, and we may think this maybe looks more like a fairy tale or something like that than an actual event involving the Supreme Lord. And of course, we'll find other incidences like that of Krishna with killing the different demons. And this will be relegated to the realm of folk tales or whatever, rather than the activities of the Supreme Lord. So, for the devotee, they see this as not something which is simply imaginary, but actually true, because when we accept Supreme Lord, we accept all of his powers. That is, he can do what no one else can do in extraordinary ways. So all of the details of the questions and doubts that we may have are solved because of the inconceivable powers of the Lord. He can lift it up however he pleases. The mountain can stay together. The rain will not enter under the mountain. There will be no flooding. And even though Krishna doesn't eat for 7 days, he doesn't get weaker. He doesn't drink anything for 7 days. He doesn't sleep for 7 days. And nevertheless, he does not get weak and tired and stumble or anything. Most people cannot even hold their hand up for more than 20 minutes without getting tired. So he held his hand up and was standing there for 7 days with the big mountain on top of him, and nothing happened. So to accept these stories, we have to accept the inconceivable power of the Supreme Lord. And if we do, then nothing is impossible for him. He can do anything. So here the Lord showed that very extraordinary power. Nevertheless, the people, all the inhabitants of Raja, more than his power, they were attracted to Krishna himself and his wonderful form. And therefore it says here that they were gazing at him, simply gazing at his wonderful form for 7 days. So more than the power of Krishna, the wonderful beauty of Krishna was attracting these people of Vrindavan. So, of course, they did have doubts about his what is going to happen. And in other places, such as Nectar of Devotion, there is described that when they saw Krishna doing that, they began to sometimes doubt that he could hold it up so much. So I think it was Vishnu Chakravarti, Jiva Goswami comments that there are pictures in which you see not only Krishna is holding up the hill, but all the cowherd men are holding sticks up and trying to support the hill also, because they think maybe Krishna cannot hold it up all by himself. So they have this fear also that we will have to help Krishna as well. So they're still thinking of Krishna as a small child. And perhaps he cannot do this by himself. And there's an incident also mentioned in the Nectar devotion there, Krishna holding up the hill, and all the inhabitants are looking at him. He's looking at all of them, and he's very pleased. And then he sees the young gopis, and he starts to get a little bit agitated, and he starts to tremble a little bit, and his hand begins to tremble, and then the mountain begins to tremble, and everyone's wondering, what is happening? What's going to happen? But of course nothing does. He controls himself, and they never figure out that it's because he's looking at the gopis that he's becoming out of control. But nevertheless, they were thinking, oh, maybe he's going to fall now, like that. So the inhabitants think of Krishna still as a small child, in spite of the fact that he is showing such extraordinary powers. And therefore it mentions here that they were simply gazing at him for 7 days. There are many aspects of the Supreme Lord which are very, very wonderful. So one, of course, is the beautiful form of the Supreme Lord. In any form, it is most remarkable. And if one is able to see that form with one's transcendental eyes, then one will become completely attracted to that form. All the forms of the Lord are attractive. The Lord appears as Varaha. And the Varaha is a form of a pig, and a wild pig. And a wild pig is not a very attractive form in general. We don't see nice statues of pigs decorating the buildings and things like that, you know. We'll find birds and things like that around, but we won't see pigs and everything, fat pigs with tusks. So they're not considered very beautiful. But when the Lord became Varaha, he was very, very beautiful, and the devatas were struck with this wonderful form of Varaha, and they began praising him. So when the Lord becomes anything, he becomes very, very beautiful, in spite of the fact that by conventional means we think that might not be so nice, but when the Lord becomes that form, he becomes most beautiful. So the Lord incarnates in all sorts of forms, like the fish and the turtle, etc., and they all become very, very beautiful and very, very wonderful. But when the Lord forms Manushya Rupa, then there is some extra beauty attached to that. And that is when he comes as the form of Krishna. There is some extraordinary beauty there. And even that beauty is in different degrees. There is Krishna when he is a baby, and there is Krishna when he's about 5 years old, when he's Kumara, and then he is Pauganda age, and then he enters into the Kishore age. And when he enters into the Kishore age, then he is considered the most beautiful of all, the most wonderful of all. So this is the most exquisite beauty. Nectar devotion, there's mention of 64 qualities of Supreme Lord in general. And of course, some of those qualities are, and that 50 qualities the jivas have to some small degree. And then demigods have a little bit more because they're empowered by the Lord. And Shiva has a little more. And Vishnu has 60 qualities. So he has those the 55 qualities completely, plus extra 5 qualities, and then Krishna has 64 qualities. So Krishna has extra qualities. Even though all the forms of God have wonderful qualities, Krishna exhibits 4 extra extraordinary qualities. So one of those qualities is his Madhurya Rupa, the extraordinary sweetness of his form. Though all the forms of God are beautiful, whether it is Rama or Narasimha or Varaha or Kurma or Matsya, whatever, they're all, immediately one sees those forms, one has ecstatic symptoms. But when one sees the form of Krishna, one is qualified, then that is the most extraordinarily beautiful form of all. More beautiful than any other form for some reason. So one reason, of course, is it is that Manushya Rupa, but not only Manushya Rupa, it is of that particular Kaishor age, that young age, when he's about 10 years old, and that particular form is considered the most wonderful form. And of course it contains all the elements of the Kumara age and the Pauganda age as well. And somehow it's all condensed in the form of Krishna. So this is the form that the inhabitants of Vrindavan saw. They saw that form of wonderful, beautiful form of Krishna, and therefore they became completely attracted, or we say intoxicated with that vision of Krishna. In the relationship with the Lord, there are different things which will attract one. These are technically called stimuli or udipana in rasa. So Krishna's sound of Krishna's flute is something which stimulates loving tendency, or the sound of his horn, buffalo horn, will instigate people, or the fragrance of his body. If someone smells the fragrance of the body, immediately they'll faint because of the ecstasy. So these are different stimulants for Krishna. Or the sound of his voice, etc. So one of the main elements also is the form of Krishna. One happens to see that form, and immediately the devotees have ecstatic symptoms and the most intense bliss simply by seeing that form. Of course, we also know that all the senses are interchangeable in one sense in the spiritual world, so technically they can be, say, similar, but nevertheless they do have a distinction of eye and nose and hand, etc., to have the different five different senses there to experience. So they have their particular bliss that they each experience. So the eye experiences the bliss of the beauty of Krishna, the beautiful form of Krishna. So of all the different forms, then those who are qualified for seeing the form of Krishna, then those people will get that extraordinary ecstasy. However, we'll see that other people, they may see Krishna or whatever, and all the other different forms, they may be attracted to another form. So those who are qualified for Krishna will appreciate Krishna and experience that type of ecstasy. Others will not. They will not get the same ecstasy and the same experience. Even they may have attraction for Vishnu or other forms. So this is according to one's, we can say, one's surupa and one's particular cultivation of a relationship. If one cultivates a relationship with Vishnu, then one establishes that relationship, and even one sees Krishna, one cannot change that relationship. One still has the attraction for Vishnu. So even when Lord Chaitanya went to Sri Rangam and stayed there for 4 months, and he was talking to the devotees of Vishnu there, who were all worshipping Sri Ranga deity, who was a Vishnu form. And Lord Chaitanya himself was glorifying Krishna and expounding the wonderful beauties and of his pastimes and his form, etc. But they did not change because they were fixed in Vishnu. And he told stories to convince them that Krishna's beauty is superior, more wonderful. Still, he could not change. Of course, one person changed. That was Gopal Bhatta, the son. He changed, and then he went to Vrindavan later on. He became a follower of Lord Chaitanya, but the other persons, the elders, they didn't change, in spite of Lord Chaitanya being there personally and glorifying Krishna. So one has a different type of relationship. He's qualified for that particular form. Then he will worship that form and get bliss from that form. So those who are qualified to see Krishna, they will appreciate that, and are qualified to have a relationship with Krishna, they will admire and take great pleasure from that form. So all the inhabitants of Vrindavan were qualified, therefore they lived there and they associated with Krishna from his birth up until he left for Mathura. They were the particular persons who were qualified for that particular form and those particular pastimes. Even the people of Mathura were not qualified, and Devaki and Vasudeva were not qualified. They did not get to see the childhood pastimes of Krishna and experience the same bliss as Mother Yasoda, Nanda, and others. different qualification, and therefore different experience of Krishna. So the conclusion is ultimately that these people, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who appear to be humble cowherd people taking care of the cows, they actually are the most exalted of all devotees, even though it may not appear so from external appearances. They are the most elevated devotees of all, in all of existence. They are the most exalted because this is the most wonderful form of the Lord. And only those who are qualified can enter into those pastimes in that place. So those people who lived in Raja, they were the most highly qualified of all. And they could experience the pastimes of Krishna when he was a young child and see that wonderful form. So they, here it says, they gazed upon that form and were completely intoxicated with that, the sweetness of that form. So this is one of the outstanding qualities which distinguish Krishna from all the other forms, the sweetness of that form. So though all forms are beautiful, there is a particular sweetness. What is the sweetness? The sweetness means, in general, that by seeing that form, one is inclined to develop a very intimate relationship with the Supreme Lord. So though the other forms are very beautiful and very attractive and all spiritual, it doesn't create that intimacy. So this particular form of Krishna as a small child, young child, this creates that intimate attitude where one does not have regard for the powers of God. One completely forgets it, all the powers. And instead one simply admires that intimate beauty of Krishna by itself, without power, without regard for Krishna as God. So this is that is why Krishna has this young form. And a young form of a cowherd boy. When we have descriptions of Krishna in Vrindavan, he has a peacock feather in his hair. He is playing the flute. He is sitting in the forest, in the grass, or among the flowers, or by the river. He is not in the palace, surrounded by servants with crown on his head and all sorts of opulences, etc. He's simply a small child there. So when we have this type of surrounding of Krishna and that the form of Krishna in this very rural atmosphere, this can invoke more easily that intimate type of relationship. And one can forget that he is Supreme Lord. So those who cultivate such a relationship, that intimate relationship, and develop this attraction for Krishna, they are considered to be very, very fortunate. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, has also emphasized this. He says that this is ultimately Radha and Krishna are the highest forms, and we should worship them. Being all merciful, he tries to preach and propagate the glories of Krishna to all people of the material world and to elevate the most fallen souls, even the aparadis, to the highest level of Krishna prema. So though it is very rare that people can enter into the pastimes of Krishna and Raja, nevertheless, Lord Chaitanya makes this very, very easy by his compassionate nature, by the holy name, etc. So though it is a rare thing and all people cannot appreciate, Lord Chaitanya, by his mercy, enables all the people to enter into the pastimes and sweetness of Krishna and develop that sort of relationship. So this is the particular contribution of Lord Chaitanya. He opens up the pastimes of Krishna for all the people of the world. And he does that through the glorification of Krishna, and through he tells everyone to listen to the Bhagavatam, because in the Bhagavatam we will see that Krishna is Bhagavan Swayam, there is direct indication that Krishna is the highest, he is supreme, he has got these extra qualities of sweetness. And this is exemplified in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, where the pastimes of Krishna are described. And here we see his very intimate pastimes with his devotees, the inhabitants of Vraja, who do not see him as God, but see him simply as their child, or as their lover, or as their friend, etc. So all the people here are gazing at Krishna in those types of relationships. And Krishna is such that simultaneously he can satisfy everybody, in spite of the fact that all these relationships are there and some of them are contradictory to the others. Vatsalya relationship and Madhurya relationships are kind of considered enemies. They don't exist together. It's very contradictory. So that is why Krishna does not display Rasa Leela and Radha Madhya Yasoda. It's a contradiction. Nevertheless, when Krishna is standing there, everyone is looking at him, everyone gets nourished in all the different rasas. Every single rasa is nourished simultaneously without any contradiction in Krishna. So this is his wonderful nature. He can do this. And nobody is disturbed as well. And all of this is fostered by and nourished by this one form of Krishna. Simultaneously, it invokes parental rasa and the conjugal rasa and the sakya rasa and the dasya rasa. And all simultaneously, in the one form, everybody is getting nourishment from that. Similarly, when Krishna went to Mathura and he entered into the wrestling arena there, as described in Bhagavatam, that everyone saw him differently. And it describes all the different people's reactions, and that covers all the 12 rasas, the primary rasas and the secondary rasas. So the young women saw him as Cupid, so they developed and nourished their Madhurya rasa. And Vasudeva and Devaki and the elder Vrishni saw him as their child. That was parental rasa. And the young cowherd boys were there also with Krishna, and they were laughing and joking, etc. So they saw him as friend. And also Hasya Rasa, joking rasa, was there with them. And other of the Vrishni dynasty saw him in Dasya Rasa. We are the servant of him. He is our king. They saw him and they were Dasya. And some of the yogis and other people, sages were there, saw him as in Shanta Rasa, as Paramatma in Shanta Rasa. And then the enemies like Kamsa, etc., was fear. Fear, and some of the other people, wrestlers and others, anger, Krodha Rasa, like this. And skeptics saw him in Bibhatsa Rasa, disgust. Who is that small child, a ridiculous child out there trying to fight? So in this way, all 12 rasas were covered by experience. And Krishna, only one Krishna was giving all these experiences simultaneously to all sorts of people. So this is possible for Krishna to do. And sometimes he does it separately in his different pastimes with his different devotees, such as when he has the pastimes with the gopis, that is separate, and when he has pastimes like Damodar Leela, that is particularly for Yasoda. But sometimes he gets simultaneously all the rasas at one time. And this is an example of that, with Krishna holding up Govardhan Hill and all the people simultaneously for 7 days nourish their own particular relationship with Krishna, one Krishna, as he's holding up the hill. And they all have different experiences of him holding up the hill. This is the extraordinary nature of Krishna. So in this way, Krishna is very extraordinary. His pastimes are very extraordinary. So they can do several things at once. So here the pastime shows how Krishna is all-powerful and does and display his achintya shakti, his extraordinary powers in so many ways. But simultaneously it also shows how he satisfies his devotees completely in intimate rasas, which is opposite of that. For the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they're not interested in power. They're interested only in the sweetness of Krishna. And Krishna does that by standing there.
and smiling at them and glancing at them, and they're glancing back. And he does that for 7 days. So though it is an extraordinary event, even more than that, they are attracted to the sweetness of Krishna. That is more astonishing to them. And when they remember this incident of Krishna lifting up Govardhan Hill, then they'll give excuses. Yes, this again is because Nanda Maharaj worshipped Vishnu, and Vishnu is helping. Or Balaram also had to help. Or it's because of Krishna having been empowered by Narayan that all this is happening. But they don't think it's simply a small boy is able to do this, therefore Krishna is God. They never think that. So primarily they're stimulated in these intimate relationships with Krishna, where they don't see him as Supreme Lord, but they see him simply as a small boy. So this is why they get their bliss, and that's why they're gazing at him so intently for 7 days. Unlike other arts experience in the material world, we may think, well, just looking at Krishna may get a little boring after a while. Just one sense is stimulated, looking at Krishna. And this is particularly interesting because Krishna actually is standing there also. Usually we don't see him like that. He's doing various activities. But here he's simply standing there. And he can't do that much also because he's holding up the mountain like that. So he's had to stand there for 7 days. But still, not doing anything, simply standing there. The bliss keeps increasing and increasing and increasing for the inhabitants. So even with one sense of simply looking with their spiritual eyes, this creates more and more bliss for the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And they don't need all sorts of varieties and whatever. Simply looking at Krishna is fully satisfying to them. So that is another aspect of the extraordinary nature of Supreme Lord, and particularly of Krishna. And he does this for all the people. Okay, any questions?
When you read the about relationship, our relationship with Krishna, we read that our relationship with Krishna is actually eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Then, of course, we read that one can the conditioned soul can actually
cultivate.
Cultivate mm-hmm. a relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
With a particular form of Krishna and then develop a particular rasa. So it seems contradictory that we already have an eternal relationship with Krishna. If we cultivate following certain personalities, liberated souls, or worship a form of Krishna, then we can perhaps develop another.
How do the two things are? Of course, I haven't seen anywhere particularly where it says that for those who are doing sadhana, that is, those conditioned souls in the material world, that they had a fixed particular rasa. Now, we obviously knit this into Krishna Prem, that the loving relationship itself with the Lord is, in one sense, eternal or whatever. That, of course, is also explained in another way by Jiva Goswami. When he says that Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, that's also there in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So there he explains that means that the that bhava, or sthayi bhava, which is a particular relationship with the Lord, is eternal. So then he explains, how is it eternal? It's eternal because it's eternally present in the Nitya Siddhas. And then it appears within the jivas, the sadhana, sadhakas in the material world when they reach the stage of bhava. That eternal relationship which is in the nitya siddhas appears also by the achintya shakti of the Lord. It starts appearing within the jiva. It is not created, but it appears within the jiva.
Before the beginning comes to the material world, he has his relationship with Krishna.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's there, and then he goes away from that.
So then where would that go then? It would not be there with him, so he wouldn't have that relationship at that time. So then it would not be eternal in one sense. So they, or if it wasn't manifested, even then it wouldn't be called eternal. So the relationship is called nitya siddha because it's always there in the spiritual world, somewhere with somebody, and then it manifests within the jiva. So whether it was there before or not, they don't say. But all they say is that it manifests, and therefore it's nitya because it's always there, but it simply manifests in the jiva. It's not created from nothing, you know. It's always there, and suddenly it manifests within the jiva by cultivation of bhakti.
I have a type of Prabhupada that I'm sure you might have read somewhere something more, but I have heard of a type a long time ago when I was in Adelaide, years ago, that Prabhupada was asked that question. He answered that Krishna can change in rasa. So it seems that, I'm just thinking this logically that it may be that we have our rasa, and then if we follow
it manifests.
Like
we can say it just manifests, I suppose. It manifests at a certain point. According to your sadhana, then it'll begin to manifest. Then you'll choose that particular attraction and develop that, which would be eternal then, we could say, because...
Right.
And then by more intense practice, it develops more and more in a particular direction.
It seems... maybe not contradictory, consciously might not be right, but that Lord Chaitanya is making Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's association with Vrindavan readily available. But it's still a very active and dynamic process, which has its challenges, as we know from the preaching within ISKCON. Then it seems that devotees doubt whether it can actually bring any more than anxiety and stress and struggle after that. It's not esoteric enough it's preaching Krishna consciousness is too ordinary in one sense to be able to give us the highest highest relationship with Krishna.
And then you have to do something else to get the higher esoteric aspects of it. Well, I think the answer to that is that it is a simple process in one sense, because we just say chant the holy name, you know, and then you can develop Krishna Prem. So that's the truth. But then along with that, there's so many, we can say, conditions or whatever. One has to have faith. One has to follow certain principles, this and that, whatever. And there's some internal things also that have to be there also. That faith has to be internal and actually has to come from the soul. Faith is from the soul, not from the mind. So there has to be that deep conviction from the soul in the Supreme Lord, and then one has to cultivate the soul's relationship through bhakti. So though we use the external senses and maybe, okay, we're chanting with our tongue, actually that internal attitude towards the Lord has to be there in the soul, and that's actually driving the cultivation with the external senses of chanting, etc. Though it looks like a simple external process, actually it has some internal elements also, which are very important, have to be developed. And therefore the very basic definition of bhakti is anukulyan Krishna nusilanam. So that favorableness towards Krishna is actually in the atma, not in the mind or the intelligence. And that has to be there with all the types of bhakti, the hearing and the chanting and remembering, etc. So it does require some sort of introspective type thing, like meditation itself in one sense is included there as well in the chanting process. So on the surface of it, it looks simple, but actually, and ultimately it is, but then to do it properly, it requires some, you know, deeper understanding as well, which we can say is esoteric. In other words, bhakti means actually something from the soul, not from the mind or the intelligence or something like that. It's not an intellectual thing, actually.
So, in one sense, the Sankirtan process is a vehicle for developing that.
The Atma's love.
Because it's sort of like this concept of a yogi, and, you know, he's secluded.
He's
in seclusion in order to perfect his meditation. His nitya siddha position, which is
Yeah. Well, for I think the Gaudis, it would be the Babaji versus the Gosyanandi and the whatever. Vajranandi and Goshtanandi, those who are simply often Radhakund chanting. That would be the very internal process, and the other would be the preaching person who would be a more active person. So both things are there, obviously. And even in the active person, he cannot neglect the internal process as well. But to be the other, that is the Babaji, etc., that requires a higher qualification, because most people have restless senses, so they cannot control their senses, therefore they are encouraged to engage the senses by doing activities. So this preaching and doing so many, worshipping the deity and so many things, this engages persons.
What about the devotee who's doing a lot of hearing and chanting but still is struggling with material desires?
Well, the hearing and chanting is there, but then the activity also helps in that process to control the senses. Engaging the senses in Krishna's service. So he does activities which engage the senses, and this is will keep them away from the material tendencies if he has engagement for them.
Because even I found a quote yesterday where Prabhupada talks about being a bookworm, and just studying. He says if you just study, you become confused. Because it's totally different. Contradictory statements
in
the
Vedas
and
the Shastra.
And he mentions that point that you mentioned before
about
having faith in Guru and Krishna.
Yeah, yeah. The, and of course, one of the, is it 13th Anga Bhakti, is studying too many Shastras. This is a do not. Don't do this, don't do this. Of course, he qualifies that. He says, this does not mean Bhakti Shastras, and it means to study with the wrong intention, that is either to gain money. In other words, we learn everything and then we go out and make a job out of giving lectures. So that's a material intention. The other is to argue in order to defeat others. We don't do it for that purpose either. If we're going to study, of course, because we have to have listen to Bhagavatam as one of the main elements, Shravanam. So that's also there. So it looks like a contradiction. So it's not a contradiction, but simply the intention has to be proper there. And has to be the proper literatures, obviously, not the Sankhya and Nyaya and all those other literatures, but Gaudiya, Vaishnava literatures according to the Acharyas. And the other point is made by Rupa Goswami that you cannot understand this, what's the nectar, what the contents of nectar devotion, with tarka, with argument of logical attitudes. One could do it only by ruchi or taste and devotion. So in approaching the scriptures again, we can be analytical, but we also have to have that devotion. Devotion is produced by our sadhana. So along with the simply studying, one also has to have the proper sadhana to understand from the point of view of faith things rather than simply logic.
I mean, you can be frustrated for the very sometimes they're chanting and they're reading and so forth, but they find that they're still not, their heart is still disturbed.
Yeah.
So then they lose faith in the process.
Well, one, of course, is, again, as I said, the internal aspect that we have to, it's not just the external things we're doing, but it's actually that internal faith, initial faith has to be there, and that's the basis of the development of the other thing, the activities. In other words, there's some internal elements there. The other, of course, is one has to avoid aparad. That has to be, one has to be careful about that. And the other, of course, is association with devotees. So that should help the process.